How you doing? You all right there? Thursday, it is. It is the 25th of March, 2021, Thursday's programme. Another glorious day in Salford. Lovely spring day. Hope yours has gone well. I've got two more guests for you with very interesting things to say. I think you'll be interested. Do join me throughout the programme by dropping me a message on Twitter. It's at BBG Richie, but you knew that, didn't you?
It's the BBG, not the BBC.
You're listening to the Richie Allen Radio Show, live from Salford in Greater Manchester.
It's the Richie Allen Show, broadcasting live on richieallen.co.uk and multiple platforms around the world. And now, here's your host, Richie Allen.
An old friend of mine joins me this hour, Paul Craig Roberts, the economist, the author, broadcaster, and former US Assistant Treasury Secretary. Paul, back on the programme today. Lots to get into with him. And in the second hour, I'm off to Cork to meet Geraldine, who's got a story to tell us about her brother, who's in a care home at the moment, and her family, his family, not too happy with news that he might be vaccinated there. We'll get into that with Geraldine in hour two, and I'll be interested in your thoughts on that. As I said, tweet me during the programme. I'll read those tweets out as we go along. It is Thursday's programme, and I am Richie Allen. A very warm welcome to you. Thanks, by the way, to everybody who's made a contribution to the programme on the back of Mark, the wonderful Mark Bajerski. Bajerski, of course, was on the programme on Monday. And at the end of the programme, Mark said, Richie, I've got 50 health packs that I want to give away to people who support you in this week. Now, everybody who has made a contribution this week will go into the draw, as it were. And I have seen quite a number of contacts through the website saying, please put me in the draw. You needn't worry. Everybody will be in the draw. All right. Thanks again. Thanks to Mark Bajerski. That is markbajerski.com. What a great guy. Now, let's move swiftly on. MPs have been debating extending the emergency coronavirus powers today. The government wants to extend the powers by 6 months, due to expire at the end of this week. They want to extend them till September 25th. No point in the debate, really, that has been taking place in Parliament, because Labour will support the government. The Labour Party will back the government. So the Conservative Party rebels, who have called the measures draconian, are all alone. Some of them have used much stronger language. It's going to get through. Have a listen to this, though. The debate was opened by Health Secretary Matt Hancock. So, opening the debate, he laid out his reasons for wanting to get the 6 months extension. Then, his shadow, John Ashworth, got a few minutes to respond. That's how it goes. No need to hear Hancock explaining why he wants the extension. We know all about that. We will hear from Shadow Health Secretary John Ashworth in a moment. So while Hancock was speaking, while he was laying out his reasons, he did, as is the custom, give way a few times to MPs who interrupted him. That is when things got very, very interesting. I hope you've got your listening ears on now. Your listening ears, because this is fascinating.
Roadmap, yeah.
I thank my right one for giving way, and he mentions data of occurrences within the NHS. Does the NHS have data to suggest how many people have sadly died from COVID in NHS hospitals 3 weeks after receiving their first dose of the COVID vaccine?
What a question. Does the NHS have data of people who have died of coronavirus 3 weeks after getting a vaccine? Matt Hancock wasn't expecting this.
Yes, the data on the impact of the vaccine, including side effects from the vaccine, and including when, sadly, people die after having had the vaccine, which is rare. These data are published by the MHRA, and if there's any data in this area that are not published, but he would like to publish, then if he writes to me, I'd be very happy to look into publishing those further data, because essentially we take an attitude of being as transparent as possible, because there are side effects to vaccine, as there are to all pharmaceutical drugs, and we want to be completely open and transparent about those, essentially to reassure people that the risks are extremely low. I'll give
away. Wow, he gives away again. But just before he gives away again, extraordinary what he said there. He said to the Conservative Party MP who asked him about data pertaining to people who died after having a vaccine, he said if there's any data that hasn't been published that he would like to be published, he should tell me. But why would there be any unpublished data? This is really interesting. Hancock has been ambushed here because as he sits down, or as he turns back to the podium to continue, he gives way again, and this time it gets even more interesting.
He's
given away to another MP.
He answered a question for me on this very subject, and he said that the data was not available.
The data is not available. The data pertaining to how many people have died having had their vaccine, 3 weeks after having their vaccine. Oh, this is good, this. And listen to how Hancock responds, the stuttering and stammering. He's caught out here.
And I can't understand why crucial data such as the number of people who have been vaccinated for more than 3 weeks, who are then admitted to hospital and then subsequently die, is not collected. Why?
Crucial data. Let's hear that again. This is beautiful. It's crucial.
And I can't understand why crucial data such as the number of people who have been vaccinated for more than 3 weeks, who are then admitted to hospital and then subsequently die, is not collected. Why is it?
This is brilliant. I cannot understand why crucial data of people who have been vaccinated and then a few weeks after they were vaccinated, they die. Why isn't that data available? Just listen to Health Secretary Matt Hancock attempt to answer this.
This data has been collated recently. It's in the so-called Siren study from Public Health England. So I'm very happy to look into exactly the data that my honourable friends are looking for. And if we have it, publish it.
Wow. I'm happy to look into the data that my honourable friends are looking for. And if we have it, publish it.
From what was asked for, I think that we do have it. But I will. Let's try.
I think that we do have it. It's fairly crucial, isn't it? How many people have died a few weeks after having their coronavirus vaccine of coronavirus?
Do that by correspondence to make sure that we're getting it exactly what's being looked for. Because on the face of it, he's absolutely right. It is exactly the sort of thing that we're looking at. So I want to make sure that we get the details of that right. Madam Deputy Speaker,
And then he moves on. He was ambushed there. You've got two Conservative MPs. Now, I don't know who they are. Right, there's 650 MPs in Parliament. I don't know the names of all of them. I could probably name a couple of hundred. And that's just because I watch and listen to the Daily News every single day, every day, every hour, for most of my bloody life. But I don't know all of them. These are two backbench guys. And these guys wanted to know. And that was a coordinated ambush. Nobody has picked up on this. Since this happened, and it happened around about 1:45 this afternoon, not a single media outlet in the country has picked up on the fact that Hancock became incredibly flustered when asked to produce data to give us the numbers of people who've died 3 weeks or more after having a coronavirus vaccine. I think those two Conservative Party backbench MPs ask that question for one reason and one reason only. They suspect that maybe quite a few people have died having received a coronavirus vaccine 3 weeks or later. Wow, right? Bombshell stuff. But look, hey, the media in this country see no evil, hear no evil. Sing dumb. Say nothing. Just pretend it didn't happen. You know? Wow. Do you have any data on people who have died after getting a vaccine? Well, look into it and if it's not published, we'll try and get it published. And panic hit Matt Hancock there, didn't it? Anyway, the powers will be extended even. Labour Party is supporting the government, as I said. Listen briefly to the Shadow Health Secretary Jonathan Ashworth's closing remarks, where he tells a lot of porky pies. Listen.
We understand why the Act must stay on the statute book and why the public health regulations must get the support of the House today. The pandemic is not over. The virus is surging again. Deaths across the world are increasing after going down.
Just a massive lie, this. I mean, this is astonishing that he would say this, in spite of everything we've learned in recent weeks.
Again. Deaths across the world are increasing.
Nonsense.
after going down for some weeks.
Bollocks.
Mutations could emerge which could bounce back at us and set us back considerably.
Wow.
Probably not back to square one, but which could evade the success of our vaccination programme. And a year ago...
mutations could emerge.
Madam Deputy Speaker, I concluded my remarks by observing that this crisis has exposed the vulnerability of a society...
Yeah, we don't need to hear any more of him. By the way, one or two Conservative backbench MPs today said to Matt Hancock, he will win the day and he will be given the extension that he seeks for 6 more months of these coronavirus powers. One MP said to him this afternoon, don't be under any illusion that when we get to September, you will again be asking for another 6 month extension. There seems to be a bit of anger. Well, we know that some Conservative Party backbench MPs, namely the COVID recovery group, Steve Baker and others, and Graham Brady and others, are really pissed off at what's going on. They seem to be getting angrier. But as I said, it doesn't matter. This will be voted on tonight and Labour Party will just wave it through. Wow. Listen to this. Sky News is running a documentary. It's just dropped. That's, if you're down with the kids, that's the terminology. They've just dropped a podcast. Your podcast host will have it. Sky has called it Through the Storm. It's a look back at the beginning of the so-called pandemic. Now, if you remember, at the beginning of the so-called pandemic, at the onset of it in March last year, Sky had reporters in intensive care wards telling horror stories of COVID patients gasping for breath and being intubated. I criticised this at the time. You might remember it was pure propaganda. Now, you'll remember these stories with the dramatic music and middle-aged men and women and senior men and women gasping for breath. Now, very well produced it was back then, it must be said. So Sky's new podcast documentary Through the Storm, revisits the footage and catches up with some of those patients who made it and survived COVID, right? Just dropped, remember. Today, Sarah Hewson of Sky spoke to her colleague Jason Farrell, Sky reporter who sent back those hospital reports last year, and a woman called Perry Gard. Perry was shown in a very distressing state early last year, struggling with coronavirus. Let's first of all hear a little bit of Perry Gard with Sarah Hewson.
You got to hospital and you were so ill, a decision was taken, you needed to be put into an induced coma and intubated. And how long were you in that coma for?
I understand it was 3.5 weeks, something like that.
And when you came out of the coma, how much do you remember about that, Perry? What was it like?
I was hallucinating and having very, very vivid dreams. Really, really weird dreams. I mentioned in the interview that I thought my parents were still alive. And when my brother said they died a long time ago, I couldn't believe it. I said, well, how can that possibly be? But my mum died in 86, my father died in 92. And there were a lot of other very, very weird dreams. I thought there was a conspiracy against me and it was a fake hospital and the doctors were out to get me and I was trying to bribe a doctor to get me out of this place and into a proper hospital. That's just one of the dreams I had. But obviously that went after after so many days, I don't know. But the ICU staff were just fantastic. Can't thank them enough.
Delirium, strange stuff, but delirium isn't uncommon. I was allegedly delirious when I was in hospital with pneumonia when I was 15, so I'm told. Now, the man behind the documentary, Sky's Jason Farrell, who, as I said, was on these wards last year, reporting at the very beginning. He's up next, and this is interesting stuff. Again, you'll hear the presenter first, Jason Farrell. Then.
Tell us about when you first met Perry.
Well, we'd been allowed access by the Royal Free because we wanted to tell a story. Someone said to me once, you go in there for an hour and you've pretty much seen it all. And my experience was the first time we went in there, we were in there for 4 hours. And all we came out feeling was that we wanted to tell more and more about the stories that were happening inside the ICU units. And I remember seeing Perry and she was in a bed next door to one of the other characters who'd just come out of a coma called Dima Hooper, who we feature in the documentary.
What did he say there? Because I think it's relevant.
And I remember seeing Perry and she was in a bed next door to one of the other characters who'd just come out of a coma.
One of the other characters?
And I remember seeing Perry and she was in in the bed next door to one of the other characters who'd just come out of a coma.
Yeah, he said characters. He didn't say patients or patient or gentleman or man. He said characters. He said characters. What am I saying? Am I saying that it was staged all of this last year? No, I'm not, because I don't have any proof of that whatsoever. And for most people, that's beyond the pale. But then we know that news organisations like the BBC, for example, have been complicit in staging events in the very recent past to sell a narrative. We know that the BBC was complicit in staging attacks in Syria, staging the aftermath of an alleged chemical attack. We know the BBC did this. It's no secret now. And I just wonder, it's a very unnatural thing for a guy to say characters. One of the characters who was coming out of a coma, characters, not patient, character. Anyway, read what you want into that. Read what you want into that. It might be something, it might be nothing at all. It might be something, it might be squat. You never know. You never know. Now, pub bosses around the country have been reacting furiously today at the comments made by Boris Johnson, the Prime Minister, yesterday afternoon. He was speaking before a House of Commons liaison committee, and he hinted that pubs could ask to see vaccine passports or proof of a negative coronavirus test before giving you a pint of stout, a pint of bitter, or a gin and tonic, right? Pub bosses reacted fairly furiously. The oldest brewing company in the country is Shepherd Neam. And Jonathan Neam, the CEO of that company, was on Radio 5 Live this morning. He didn't pull too many punches now, talking about how silly this idea is. Here he is.
If we start imposing additional or voluntarily asking for checks on the door, you kind of undermine what the purpose of a pub is, which is to be an inclusive, diverse, welcoming environment that you can just drop into at a moment's notice.
Have you had loads of bookings for your pub gardens already?
Yes, I do think there's very strong demand, and I think that there's a real appetite out there to reconnect, to socialise, to meet up with friends and family again. And I just can't imagine the situation of a family turning up at a pub where grandpa's forgotten his vaccination and certificate, mum is pregnant and therefore been told not to have it, and the kids are too young and half the family is turned away. That would be awful at a time when we're all trying to reconnect as a society and learn to laugh and love humanity again. So I think we should part this idea and move on.
Learn to laugh and to love humanity again. Jonathan Neam there of Shepherd Neam Brewery or Brewing Company. Boris Johnson seemed to roll back a bit today on what he had said yesterday. Here he is speaking with Sky News' Beth Rigby.
What we're doing is rolling out a very fast vaccine programme and concentrating first on the elderly and the most vulnerable. So we're getting the jabs into the arms of those groups. We're wanting to give them their second doses. Now we'll be focusing a lot on that to protect them, because that's the way to build the wall of resistance around the country to protect us against hospitalisation and death. And in the meantime, obviously we're looking at the issues that are raised by vaccination certification. What can you do? Now, in aviation, clearly there are lots of countries are thinking about using some sort of vaccine passport. And I think that there are three basic components. There's the vaccine, there's your immunity that you might have after you've had COVID, and then there's testing. So there are three things that could work together. No decisions have been taken at all. One thing I will make clear is none of this is obviously going to apply on April the 12th, when it will all be outdoors anyway. So whatever happens, April the 12th will be unaffected.
But just to be clear, from what you're saying, that you are considering that you either will need a test or a vaccination and proof of that to go indoors into a pub past May the 17th?
Well, all sorts of things are being considered. I really think it's a bit premature to start talking about that. What we want to do is roll out the vaccine programme and see what that builds in terms of general resistance to the virus. And I do think there is so going
when
to
will
be,
you
there
make
is
a
going
decision,
to be a
then?
Role
when
for,
will we know? Because the public will want to know.
What we said is that we'll be reporting on the work of the certification group in early April, either on April the 5th or on April the 12th.
Boris Johnson speaking there with Sky News' Beth Rigby. And I can bring you a development. MPs have voted already to extend emergency coronavirus laws for another 6 months. That comes as no surprise whatsoever. As I said, the government had the support of the opposition parties, the Labour Party, and that 76 voted against, 484 voted for, a majority of 408. The Coronavirus Act emergency powers are extended until the 25th of September. There you go. Health and Social Care Minister Edward Argar said, as it was wrapped up, these are not measures any of us would choose to do were we not faced with such a grave situation, but the measures are necessary, he said. So that's a bit of a breaking news. We hate to use terms like that, breaking news. But there you are. Unsurprisingly, coronavirus emergency powers extended until the end of September. And as one Tory backbench MP said today, undoubtedly, as we get to September, they will ask for them to be extended until, let me do my mathematics on my fingers, October, November, December, January, February, March, March again. Yes, that's all you have to do, Richie. March. 6 months from now. 6 months from now must be March. Yes, so that's what they'll do. 21 minutes past the hour. Thanks for your tweets at BBG Richie on Twitter. Thank you. Articles being posted daily on richieallen.co.uk. Some good, some terrible, some indifferent. But anyway, I try me best. You can get on there, read them. You can argue with me. You can disagree. You can fight amongst yourselves. Some interesting things on there today. One of the things on there today, which you might find interesting, is news that Santander Bank will close 111 branches in the country by August. And why that's relevant, it's relevant because TSB and HSBC and the Cooperative Bank have said they will be closing hundreds of branches as well. They are blaming coronavirus for changing people's banking habits. They are saying that more and more transactions are being done on mobile phones and online. This is terrible. But I don't have to tell you why it's terrible, because you're not stupid. You know what the cashless society will do. You know that it goes hand in hand with social crediting. You know this. You know that bail-ins become possible when these feckers eliminate cash eventually. And don't say that bail-ins are fanciful and conspiratorial and conspiracy theory. It happened in Cyprus, and I guarantee you, when they tell us very soon that they just can't find a way to pay down the 500 billion and counting debt that has been incurred to try and fight coronavirus, that's when they start talking about wealth taxes, one-off wealth taxes on everybody in the country. Believe me! Amy Winehouse on the Richie Allen Show, 25 minutes past 5 o'clock, with Thursday's programme, March 25th, 2021. Drive time in Salford, not too many cars on the road though. Hey listen, I'm really excited to welcome back a friend of ours, a great, great man, an economist, author, brilliant broadcaster, and a former US Assistant Treasury Secretary. It's been far too long since we heard him. Let's welcome back the great Paul Craig Roberts. Hey Paul, welcome back.
Thank you, Richie.
Lovely to have you on. How have things been for you since we spoke at the end of June? And since then, apart from coronavirus, you've had an election, you've got a new president. How have things been for you before we get into some of the excellent articles on your website today?
Well, you know, I was fortunate to be in the state of Florida because they didn't do the lockdown. So as far as we can tell in Florida, there's no such thing as a corona pandemic. People go around normally everywhere. The restaurants are full. The bars are full. The gyms are full. The beaches are full. The stores are full. A few people wear masks, but there are no mask mandates from the governor and no lockdowns. Florida had a short experience with that over a year ago, or about a year ago, when the beaches were closed for a few weeks. It interrupted spring break. But shortly after that, the governor realized that there was really no payoff in the lockdowns, and that the masks are ineffective unless they are N95s, which were hard to come by at the time. And so all restrictions were lifted, and as far as I can tell living here, though I might contact this disease tomorrow,
yeah,
we don't see any sign of it. You couldn't convince people in Florida it's anything but a hoax.
It is a hoax, isn't it? I mean, the nature of the pandemic, I mean, the virus might very well be genuine. We've spoken about that way back in March last year. We talked about it. But the seriousness of it, that seems to me to be the hoax, right?
It seems to be used for two reasons. One is to create enough fear in the population that they will consent to being vaccinated with experimental drugs. And the second is it's used to greatly extend the invasion of civil liberty by governments. So it's a profit-making operation, and it's a control-establishing operation. Whether that was the reason the virus was released or not, it's certainly how it's being used. So in a way, it's undermined confidence in government because about half of the people are aware of that. You know, what's so striking is there are so many medical professionals who refuse to take these experimental vaccines.
Yeah, that's right.
So, and we see lots of troubles resulting from the British vaccine and the two American ones. I think the last I read a week or so ago, 20 countries had suspended use of these vaccines. And it seems the Pfizer one has caused a great deal of trouble in Israel, lots of illnesses or side effects. So, it was in many ways a hoax. I mean, I'm not saying the virus isn't real. But look, have you heard anything about the flu season?
No. Well, do you know what we have? And folks, go to Paul's website, paulcraigroberts.org, and look at the archive of articles, because this is very important. Yeah, our National Health Service made an extraordinary claim, as I know you know this, a few weeks back. They said that they hadn't recorded a single case of flu in 2021, Paul. Now, I'm not the brightest spark in the box, me, I never have been, but that makes no sense to me whatsoever.
Yeah, well, they conflate flu with COVID. And here in the United States, the practice is to report almost all deaths as COVID deaths.
Yeah.
So this is how they get the high death rate, or it's really, even now it's not high, even though they report all deaths as COVID deaths, or almost all deaths. Even motorcycle deaths get reported.
That's right. That's how they do it here, Paul. If you test positive within 28 days, if you die within 28 days, you're given the COVID death. And like you said, you could have fallen out of a window. You know? It's sinister and horrible, and yet you have to laugh sometimes because otherwise you go crazy. I would be remiss if I didn't ask you. Everybody knows you because of you know, the heights you reached in the Reagan administration, and because of your books, of course. So they know that you're an octogenarian. God forgive me for saying it out loud. Have you been offered the vaccine? Presumably you would have been offered it at this stage.
No, I haven't been offered.
Wow. How interesting, because most people in this country over 60 now have been offered it. And we're hearing, just as you said a while back, we're hearing that a lot of people are hesitant or they're flatly turning it down. It's going to be interesting, Paul, what type of coercive measures the government might introduce to try and make us change our minds, right?
You see, you're right, Richie, because the goal is not public health as profits for big pharma. And so here we have with COVID a clear case of where profits are the issue, not public health. So they'll inject people with all kinds of experimental doses. You have to understand the American vaccines, the Pfizer and what's the other one, Moderna?
Moderna, yeah.
These are not vaccines. They don't have any dead or live virus. They are a technological approach based on RDA. And it's not anything that's ever been used. They have no idea the consequences of this. And so it's really a mass experiment on the entire population. I regard it as highly irresponsible. A vaccine has to be either the dead virus or the live virus. But that's not what the Americans are. Now, I don't know about the British one. I don't know whether it's using that technology.
Yeah, we've got the mRNA vaccines as well, the experimental ones. So we have the Pfizer vaccine, the Pfizer-BioNTech vaccine, that is being used here. And the other one is the AstraZeneca vaccine, which is which has been very controversial, of course, because there have been claims that it's caused blood clotting in some people, and some of the European countries suspended it for a while, as you know. But yeah, everybody's concerned about the mRNA vaccines. Folks, Paul Craig Roberts is our guest. I've always recommended you check out paulcraigroberts.org. Paul's a terrific author and a great journalist, so read his articles. Paul, you and I have seen the presidency of Donald Trump a little bit differently, I think, over the last few years, it's fair to say. But no, I have enormous respect for your writings on him, and I go along with a lot of what you have to say about him and the things he tried to do, de-escalating tensions with Russia, which is a massive thing. It's very important. Nobody should ignore that. And how he was attacked and the fake stories they put out there about collusion, all that rubbish, which you've written about so well for so many years. A lot of my listeners, most of my listeners would go along with you, not me, I've got to say that, when it comes to kind of analysing Trump. And most of them say to me, Richie, we would be far better off now in the next couple of years with President Trump than President Joe Biden. You've got Biden now, Paul. What is it looking like with Biden? I believe he's going to give his first official briefing today, or maybe he has done.
Well, it seems like that he is impaired in some way.
Yeah,
it's just it's an age condition that many people get. Thankfully, it hasn't happened to me yet. Knock on wood.
Knock on wood. Yeah.
But most people expect that he will be moved out of the way, and this Kamala Harris will be president, and of course she's no more qualified for the job than Biden. In fact, in many ways Biden is qualified because he's been there in the swamp, I think, for 40 years.
40 years, yeah. Yeah.
So he knows, unlike Trump, he knows that the function of an American president is to please the establishment while getting their permission to put some crumbs off the table for the ordinary people. That's the function of the president. He or she these days comes in. It's the establishment's president. The president negotiates with the establishment. Let me do some of these things for the people, so they will reelect me, they will support the party, and that's the way a presidency works. Now, Trump didn't know that. He thought the power was his, not the establishment's, and that he could come in. He was used to being the boss, he was used to people doing what the boss says, and he thought that's the way the presidency worked. And he finally learned that's not the way it works. It's an office that serves the establishment. It doesn't matter whether it's a right-wing guy, a left-wing guy, a Republican, a Democrat, a man or a woman, a transgendered, yeah, or whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
That's the way it works. And so when people criticize a president, they don't understand. The president is a creature of the system. And if he behaves differently than the system allows, they run him off. And Trump was run off. They simply said, well, look, you don't understand. You're supposed to be serving us. And so you got to go.
In support of your argument, I believe he was sincere in trying to establish better relationships, not only with Vladimir Putin and the Russian government, but also with the North Korean administration. I believe that was genuine. I don't believe there was any staging in that. I go along with that. I think he thought, I'll be a great, you know, I will cement some sort of legacy as a great uniter of nations. I do believe that, Paul. I agree with you.
Yeah, that was his big mistake, because it threatened the budget and power of the military security complex. And his other big mistake was, he says he's going to bring the jobs home for the working class. Well, that cuts into the profits of the global corporations. They make their money from using very inexpensive labor abroad, right, and they bring their cheaply made goods back here to sell, and they don't drop the prices.
That's right.
The
That's
prices
right.
are the same as if they were paying American workmen to make these goods and services. So that was his second mistake. And the establishment took advantage of him there, because they turned the jobs and manufacturing offshoring issue into a tariff issue. It's not a tariff issue. Trump didn't know that, but that's how he got advised. And so that put him into conflict with China.
Yeah.
In other words, they protected the real villains, which are the global corporations who closed down the American manufacturing plants, deserted their workforce, deserted the cities and states, and took the jobs to China. So instead of blaming them, they maneuvered Trump into a tariff fight. So China is blamed, not the global corporations. So really, Trump was out of his league. And his other great problem was, as I said, in 2016, he did not know who to appoint to help him with his agenda. It was an anti-establishment agenda. He had no idea who to put in office that would dare go against the establishment.
So that's why, in your opinion, that's why he ended up with the swamp, effectively. Yeah. It's a really good argument, Paul. I mean, I'm not patronizing you. You know I love you. I don't know if I go along with it, but I don't know any more than you. I hear you. I want to believe this. I want to believe, because he said the thing about vaccines, and I think he was sincere. We're giving too many vaccines to our children. I think he believed that. He met with Wakefield. He said these things, and he seemed to be genuine. So I'm going to go along with you. He didn't know what to do, so he ended up with the swamp anyway. And you've written very, very good piece today, or yesterday, called Sowing the Seeds of War. You're worried that American people are totally ignorant to how dangerous Washington's goading of Russia and China is and what it might lead to. You still do worry, Paul, that a massive global conflict might eventually come out of this.
Well, if you look at it factually, Richie, when have we ever witnessed such demonization of a political leader as Putin receives?
Never, not in my lifetime.
Or of a country that Russia receives. Now, normally, when you demonize a country, you are building your own population up to accept war. And the kinds of demonizations that Putin and Russia suffer, and China as well, and Iran also, these are warlike demonizations. During the entirety of the Cold War, when the United States was arrayed against the Soviet Union, no American president ever spoke disrespectfully of the General Secretary of the Communist Party. Ever.
Yeah.
Never. And Reagan, when Reagan went to Reykjavik to meet with Gorbachev to begin unwinding the Cold War, he told all of us, he said, look, no one shows any disrespect to the Russians or you're out of here. He was explicit on that. We're not going there to lord over anybody. We're going over there not to win, but to end the Cold War. Well, now we've got the Democrats. We've got Hillary. Putin is the new Hitler.
Yeah.
Biden, the president of the United States, he's a killer. Well, this is unprecedented in diplomacy. And it continues, and it gets worse and worse. And we're always issuing threats and more threats. I don't know if you know, because the Western press doesn't really report, but are you aware of what happened at the Alaska meetings last week between the Chinese and the Americans?
Only because I've read about it on your website. So, I'd be honest, I wouldn't have known if it wasn't for you. I'm going to tweet a link to the article. Tell us about that, Paul. This is very serious.
Well, the leader of the Chinese delegation told the Americans, said, look, where did you get the idea that you are in a position of strength, that you can tell us what to do or strangle China? Where did you get the impression that you constitute world opinion?
Yeah.
He said, if you want to deal with us, you're going to have to be polite and understand that you're just one country.
That's called being put back in your box. That's what we call that over here. Yeah. It's a brilliant piece, that. And I wouldn't have known that happened. And what's the likely Washington response to that, Paul? What's the response likely to be?
Oh, they won't. I don't know. But there won't be any talk about it. Because it means the Chinese have now joined the Russians in rejecting any idea of American hegemony or any idea that America speaks for world opinion.
Yeah.
And so it's such a rejection of American power that Washington will just ignore it.
One of the questions I was asked to put to you today, I mentioned you were coming on, and listeners were thrilled because it's been such a long time. It won't be as long in the future. We'll ask you back, of course, next month. One of the things I was asked to put to you with your economic expertise, it's often been said that, I mean, you've talked about war there. I mean, you've talked about the possibility. Is the economic disaster of coronavirus, does that give us a clue also that we might be heading for war? This country has borrowed £500 billion and counting to pay for coronavirus. God only knows what it's like elsewhere in the world. But my knowledge of history, being a history graduate, is that conflict often arises out of, this level of debt. What do you think?
I don't think it's
likely.
You see, if there's a war between the United States and Russia or China, it'll be nuclear.
Yeah.
Because there's no prospect whatsoever of Washington fielding an army against the Russians or the Chinese. There's no prospect of a conventional war. Washington simply could not wage a conventional war against Russia or China. We would be exterminated.
Yeah.
We can only wage nuclear war. And so my fear of how the war happens is that Washington is so aggressive in its demonizations and in applying sanctions and in doing everything it can to harm the Russian economy, to harm the Chinese economy. Until recently, the Russians have simply just accepted this and smiled. And I think that encourages even more extreme actions by Washington. And so my fear is that the United States doesn't get called out. And so it continues and continues, and it gets worse and worse until something just blows up.
Yeah.
That's my feeling of it. Now, the Chinese putting their foot down last week, I mean, that told the United States right there that they weren't any longer tolerating this.
Yeah, you make a good point, Paul. You make a good point, too, about some of these accusations about human rights abuses. And if it's true about the treatment of Uyghur Muslims in China, if it is true, neither you nor I would tolerate that or accept it as a good thing. It's not. But it's a real cheek, isn't it, for the governments of the United States and the UK to talk about human rights abuses. I mean, you've got no sense of reality if you're in this country and you're accusing the Chinese and the Russians of being violators. We're just as bad or worse.
That's right. I mean, after 20 years of America's wars in the Middle East, all based on lies, millions of people killed, displaced, maimed, orphaned, widowed. And you see, the CIA is very active in that Muslim province of China for the very purpose of creating an issue that we can use to denounce China. So it's just like the whole Hong Kong thing. This was a CIA operation in Hong Kong. So the Chinese know that. And so they know it's a orchestrated human rights claim. Whereas they also know that the United States attacked seven countries in the last 20 years entirely on the basis of false pretenses. And so that's not an orchestrated human rights issue. It's a real one. And so they tend to get angry that they get criticized for something Washington orchestrates, and then Washington doesn't get criticized for its absolute horrid human rights violations.
Not by our media.
So that this is when people get where they won't take it anymore, and yet they're strong enough to resist you, that's when things pop off into wars. And so that worries me more than the hurt economies from the lockdowns, because it's not like we're fighting with Russia over resources or fighting with China over resources. The United States is fighting with China over technology. We're trying to block their 5G technology from being adopted elsewhere in the world. But probably will be unsuccessful. But this is not the same thing as the old kinds of wars. We need land, we need oil
and gas.
It's not that type of a fight.
Really interesting stuff, this. PaulCraigRoberts.org. Check Paul out if you haven't. I know you know who Paul is. Paul, let me ask you this. One of the things that we're seeing happening here in the UK is bank branches are closing by the hundreds. And senior banking officials are saying that the pandemic has changed people's banking habits, that most banking is done online now, even people are banking using their mobile phones. Now, I know you've written about this and I know you know all about this. One of my biggest fears is that we're not rushing towards a cashless society. I think we might very well be there. And that's got profound implications, doesn't it, for personal freedom and for surveillance and for the state, you know, for its power over us.
Well, that's exactly right, Richie. A digital monetary system is one in which you no longer have any safety in your own assets because they can cut you off from at will. It's not like, you know, digital money you can't take out and hide under your mattress or dig a hole in the ground or keep cash in the house. It's no way you can protect it from being blocked or seized. And so if you get on the wrong side of authorities, they can simply cut you off from having ability to pay for anything, your mortgage, your taxes, your food, your electric bill. your car payment. In other words, it's a deadly form of control that you can't escape. You know, a lot of the Christian fundamentalists say that it's digital money that's the mark of the beast in the Bible, which gives the rulers absolute total control over the people.
And they can use that system to punish people for anything, can't they? I mean, the Chinese have this kind of relatively new social credit model, which we think is terrible. I mean, you've always been very fair towards the Chinese and the Russians, and you know, you're not a prostitute, you call it as you see it. But we do have to criticise the Chinese social credit model because it's very spooky. But we can criticise it, but our country seemed to be desperately keen to adopt that model. And who's to say that somebody might say, ah, that Paul Craig Roberts now, he's saying things that we don't like on his website. He's telling the truth. Let's cut Paul's access from his bank accounts for 2 weeks. They can do that, Paul. They could do that.
Well, actually, Richie, I think the West already has a social credit system. I mean, look at how easily you can be deplatformed.
Yeah.
I mean, experts. Look how they deplatformed all the experts, immunologists, virologists who had doubts about how they were dealing with COVID, who had doubts about the vaccines. They simply are shut up.
Yeah.
They're not given any kind of forum. There should be, you know, when an expert raises a question like that, there should be public discussion. We should see, well, has he got a point or is he wrong? But instead, we just shut them up. Well, that's a social credit system right there, if you say something. Now, if they have digital money, they may also just cut them off from their income.
Yeah.
And they don't have to reopen it in 2 weeks.
It's amazing you mentioning that, because it should stun people that Twitter was able to delete the president of the United States of America, the sitting president. Even Bernie Sanders, I believe, has spoken out against this in the last day, or maybe even this morning, saying that this is astonishing. If they can get rid of the president off a platform, they can get rid of anybody.
Right. That's it. You got it.
In a nutshell. Wow.
Now, you know, in years past, if Twitter had pulled something like that, it would instantly have been nationalized.
Yeah, it would have been taken over. That's right.
It instantly taken over. You know, you have to remember the years back when the steel companies were causing labor problems by holding down wages and wanting to stick up prices. And the president told them they didn't want to be nationalized tomorrow. They'd better change their policy.
Yeah. And yet Twitter could get away with that. And Facebook as well.
Today, one social media organization is more powerful than the president of the United States.
Yeah. And it's basically circumvented. It's taken over the press, really. It's even bigger than all of the press. What about news that former president Trump might be looking to launch his own social media platform? He has the power, and I suppose he has the backers, that it could be something. Because you hear about people inventing new social media platforms, and then it turns out to be Mickey Mouse. But if Trump did it and he had enough backers, well, it might be substantial. What do you think of that?
I don't know whether he'll do it or not. The trouble of having an alternative one is, where are you going to get the journalist?
Yeah.
Because the journalist will want to be accepted by the prostitutes, by all the other journalists who have all the social connections and the dinner parties and all the awards that they give. And so the alternative media will kind of be isolated. And so the temptation will always be on the alternative media's journalists to sort of ease up, be a little more accommodating toward the prostitutes' views. And so it may not come to anything. You'd have to have a strong bunch of people. I mean, I don't know how many Tucker Carlsons there are.
Yeah, he's still there, isn't he?
Yeah. Well, how many Richie Allens there are.
Yeah.
But you would need a lot of them. And they would have to be determined, and they'd have to see it basically as an obligation to defend truth so that we have some idea of reality rather than some make-believe world or some matrix created by lies.
This year and last year has proven, well, it's proven you right about the media. When you have Harvard University professors like Martin Kulldorff. Now, I interviewed Martin Kulldorff on this programme 5 months ago, 4 months ago, and I asked him, you know, and I knew the answer. I said, are they banging down your door, Professor Kulldorff, to hear your thoughts on the pandemic and lockdown? And he said, no. And here's an eminent, you know, so, I mean, I asked you 10 years ago. I was naive. You might say, I know you think I'm naive today, but I was even more naive 10 years ago. 10 years ago, I said to you, Paul, I'm surprised that, you know, with your distinguished positions that you have held over the years, I'm surprised that you're not being invited on The View or Good Morning America to share your opinions. And you laughed at me and you said, Richie, no chance. They're not going to have me on. And that's when I realised it. But in the last 12 months, we've really seen them for what they really are, the prostitutes, haven't we? They've revealed themselves, Paul.
Yeah. Oh, years and years ago, I was on all those programs.
Yeah. You were back in the 90s and the early noughties. Yeah.
Yeah, the 80s, the early 90s. You know, I've told you before, once Clinton was president, he allowed six mega companies to concentrate 90% of an independent American media into their hands. So 90% of the media disappeared into six mega firm hands. And these mega conglomerates, they've got, you know, defense industries, all this stuff.
Yeah.
And so the media simply became a propaganda mechanism for the establishment. And it's been like that since, I think it was 1997 when Clinton permitted, it was the last year or two of his time in office, whatever that was, that we violated the Antitrust Act. We permitted massive concentration. This is not only against U.S. law, it was against U.S. Practice. We had always relied on an independent and varied media as a watchdog on the government. Well, that disappeared under Clinton. And of course, it's even worse today than it was initially.
Yeah, we had the same problem here. What we see here now is I'm talking to you from Salford, which is a mile and a half away from Manchester. Over the years, you'll know this, over the years, all the cities, they had their own independent radio stations. And those radio stations were run by businessmen and businesswomen in the community. And they didn't own anything else or any other radio stations. They had their radio station. So you could talk about anything and you could cover anything. Now all of the radio stations in this country are owned by two mega companies called Global and Bauer. So there's no local news anymore, Paul. There's no local politics. It's just this globalist agenda that you write about so much on paulcraigroberts.org. Before we part company today, and I'll be asking you back next month, been a pleasure to have you back. Funny piece. I find it funny, even though there's a lot of truth in it. You wrote an article on the website today, which made me laugh about men, the feminization of Western men. God, that is true, isn't it? What's happened to men? I remember watching an episode of The Sopranos many years ago, and Tony Soprano, played by the late, great James Gandolfini, he said, what happened to Gary Cooper? What happened to John Wayne? What's happened to real men, Paul? Why are men so effeminate? What's going on? Where's the real men?
I can't say exactly I know why it's happened, but it certainly has. And, you know, high culture now makes skirts for men. And we now have these androgynous looking males with shaved legs wearing skirts and high heels. And this is now high culture. And all the big high cultural clothing firms are in on this. In fact, I think the photographs I saw were in The Guardian.
The Guardian. That's right. Yeah, it was in The Guardian. We see a lot of it here. A lot of, I don't know if it's promotion of people like that or characters like that. And look, I'm a live and let live guy, but yeah, you could argue there's an agenda there. Some somewhere. Listen, thanks for coming back on today. Thanks for giving me a kick in the backside, by the way, and asking me where the hell am I, because should have been in touch before now. You've been a great guest and friend to the programme for years and the independent media. So I hope I'll give you a knock on the door early in April and we'll get you back on to shoot the breeze again, Paul. It's always a pleasure.
It's a pleasure to talk to you, Richard.
Enjoy the rest of your day. Thanks, Paul.
Okay.
The brilliant Paul Craig Roberts. Folks, if you haven't checked out Paul's website, I know you have. It's paulcraigroberts.org. A brilliant guy. Read his books, read the articles. Former US Assistant Treasury Secretary Paul Craig Roberts on the Richie Allen Radio Show. It's exactly 2 minutes past six. It's time for a tune. God, I'm gasping for a glass of water, so I'll have a glass of water. I'll be speaking to Geraldine in Cork shortly, and she's got a very interesting story to tell about care homes. I'll read some of your tweets as well at BBG Richie. Thursday's programme with me, the BBG. Hootie and the Blowfish only want to be with you. The Richie Allen Radio Show, 6 minutes past 6 o'clock is what it is.
Thanks to you, the Richie Allen Show is the most listened to independent radio show in Europe. Show your support for this unique broadcaster by making a regular financial contribution. Just the price of a cup of coffee each month will make a massive difference. Visit richieallen.co.uk for details.
And thank you for your tweets during the program. Fanula Murphy, how you doing, Fanula? Great stuff, Fanula. Interesting tweet this. I've heard this before, and I think there's something in it. Fanula tweets, could the feminization of men be due to the estrogen in the water from the contraceptive pill? It might very well be. It might very well be. And I think that's something worth exploring on a future programme, on a programme right soon as well. Hi to Nerny Ness. How you doing, Nerny? Thanks for your tweet. The answer is no. And that gentleman might have passed away, maybe. I'm not sure. You've recommended a gentleman. I don't want to name him in case he's still alive. But you're asking me about a gentleman. Have I interviewed him before? I haven't. I've heard good things about him, but he might not be around anymore. God love him. So I won't name him. Ida Shono says, Richie, when is the economist from Belfast coming on the programme? Claire. Not any time soon, Sean. I had a lovely chat with Claire off air about what she was telling me on the programme. And she won't be coming on anytime soon. There's nothing bad about that. It's just not convenient for her to do it in the near future. Claire phoned in and had some really interesting things to say about the economy and where it's going. We've spoken since, had a lovely chat, lovely lady, but it's not convenient for Claire to speak to me in the near future. It might change as time goes on. Gaz was very inspired by Kevin Sharkey yesterday and his art. Gaz says, I am an artist and I haven't painted for about a year. Go and paint, Gaz. Paint what you see. I did ask Kevin Sharkey about that. He said, no, there's more important things than painting at the moment. He blew my idea out of the water. I would imagine poets and writers who are clued in and awake and know what is happening, I imagine some of them will attempt to describe this era through their ability, through their writings and their music and their poetry, maybe. I don't know. Time will tell, I suppose. William says microplastics and chemicals like fipronil might account for the feminization of men. It is funny. We've been talking about this for some years, you know. Men wearing man bags. I remember going to... I told you the story. It's not an interesting story. But I was in a major pharmaceutical retailer. You probably know who it is. A couple of years back, I talked about it on the programme, and I was fairly gobsmacked to see men being made up at a counter. And I immediately surmised, and I was wrong, that there was some sort of in-store promotion or in-shop promotion. I must not allow myself to begin speaking like an American. Not that there's anything wrong with you Americans, but I'm not from America. I thought there's an in-shop promotion, surely. This will explain why these blokes are getting makeup. And no, there was no in-store or in-shop promotion. The little bollockses were doing it as a matter of fact, as a matter of normality. Getting makeup, men. I didn't like it one bit, so I didn't. Let's get Geraldine on the programme. At BBG Richie, that's the Twitter handle. Do please check out richieallen.co.uk. Website is not so new. It's been around a couple of months now, but a lot happening on it. And I'm really happy with it and the way it's progressed. Not too many issues with it. And again, a big, big, big shout out to Hayden Hewitt for developing it. If you need a website for your business at all, do check out Hayden Hewitt. Find him on Twitter. Find him through me. Find him through my website. He will be very competitive when it comes to pricing. He will undercut the big boys and he will do just as good a job or better. And you will get 1,000 times better aftercare with Hayden Hewitt than you will with anybody else. He's a great guy, one of the most sincere and decent blokes I've ever met. He's also a brilliant man. Check out Hayden Hewitt's big show, the Trigger Warning Big Show, tonight from around about 10 o'clock on youtube.com/Trigger Warning TV. That's youtube.com/Trigger Warning TV. Geraldine got in touch with me. It's a miracle, to be honest, that I saw the email. The website gets hundreds of emails a day. And I was on the website when Geraldine's email came in. And she got in touch to tell me about a care home problem that her family is experiencing in Cork. Her brother is in care. We'll have a chat with Geraldine. She'll give us the lowdown. Geraldine, welcome to the programme. You are in Cork, aren't you? I hope I didn't get that wrong.
Actually, I'm not in Cork. Sorry, I didn't manage to communicate that to you. I'm from Cork, but my boyfriend is Tunisian, so I'm currently in Tunisia.
Oh, you're in Tunisia right now? Wow.
Well, yeah, right now, yes. Brilliant. So it's difficult for me to keep up to date with everything that's happening at home.
I can only imagine, yeah. So what's the time difference there? You're a couple of hours ahead of me, are you?
I think 2 hours ahead.
Just after 8 o'clock there. Yeah. Ah, very good.
So, sorry, I didn't...
No, don't be sorry at all. Don't be ridiculous. It's me. I've
been here since last July. I live in Belgium. Normally, that's where my boyfriend works. But his mother lived here. She passed away, unfortunately, a few months ago. So we've been here with... We stayed with her for as long as we could. Until she passed away, and we've been here ever since because of all the restrictions. We're unable to go back to Europe at the moment, but eventually we'll have to go back.
Well, hopefully,
yeah. Not looking forward to that.
Wow. I'll ask you later on about life in Tunisia. Obviously it's been difficult with your partner's mum passing away, obviously, but I would be interested. Tell us about, let's not mention the care home by name. I'll tell you why, because I've not been able to get in touch with them to give them any sort of right of reply. And I think it really doesn't matter, because I think this is a bigger issue, because when Susie Buckley was on this programme a couple of weeks ago, I received at least 24 emails from people who said, Richie, don't mention my name, but my dad or my brother or my sister is in a similar situation. Your brother John is in care, mm-hmm. Geraldine. Tell us about him and tell us what's going on at the moment.
Okay, so I understand that I won't mention the care home name. So my brother is autistic. He's 2 years older than me, so he's 44. And he's been unable to speak since about the age of 2 after he had an I don't want to make this into an anti-vax thing, but I just want to lay out the facts. He received an MMR vaccine when he was about 2. And basically made him unable to speak. He also suffers from epilepsy. So actually, my parents didn't know when they'd adopted him that he had epilepsy. So when he received the vaccine, they just weren't aware of the possible consequences. So he has epilepsy and he has regular fits. So my parents at their age, now they're in their 70s, they would be unable to look after him full time. So he's been in a care home for most of his life, actually, coming home at the weekends or the middle of the week. But the past year obviously has been completely different. He's been isolated from family. I saw photos of him on his birthday on the 28th of January. He looked very depressed, and they actually prescribed antidepressants to him because, they thought, that's, the solution. There's always a big pharma solution, isn't there? You know, don't allow him more family contact, just prescribe a pill. So obviously he's been isolated from family for months. They're only, they have to fight to see him, basically, like physically,
That must be very hard on your mum. That must be incredibly hard on your mum.
It's very hard. She had to fight to see him. He came home there a few weeks ago, and she was delighted. But she had to fight very hard for that, because they wouldn't leave him, with the family. They wanted him to stay at the care home and for my parents to go and visit him there only. So yeah, it's very, very, very difficult. And I'm sure, like, I'm not the only person. There's lots of people in this situation, and not just with, you know, disabled, as elderly as well. I mean, worse situations than ours, I'm sure. But yeah, it's like the fact that they prescribed him antidepressants without any parental consent. They give him regular PCR tests. I think it's every week or 2 weeks. They never asked for the consent of my parents for that either. And now we have this gene editing therapy, whatever, experimental vaccine, whatever it's called. They're pushing it like hell. My father was on the phone with the care home director and John's GP the other day. My mother is completely opposed to this vaccine. We've educated her on the dangers, so there's no, you know, she's not going to be persuaded. Whereas my father is, he's a bit easier to persuade. So yeah, on the phone the other day, they said to my father, trying to sell the vaccine, they said, when we were able to take the lads at name of care home out to shops and restaurants again, if John doesn't have the vaccine, he won't be protected. That's like just a complete load of bullshit, basically. We know this is a dangerous vaccine or injection or whatever you want
now,
to call
Geraldine,
it.
Now, Geraldine, they made this phone call to your dad, presumably because your mother signaled signaled that she would prefer that John didn't have the vaccine. Is that why they got in touch with your dad?
Exactly. They know my mother just cannot be persuaded, because myself and my younger sister especially we've done a really good job of educating my mother. My mother also won't be receiving the vaccine. She told her GP that she won't be receiving the killer jab. So she's well educated, well informed. My dad is actually, they're really afraid of is that if we don't let the care home do what they want, that John could be denied care. That's the real fear. Now my mother is less fearful, because she knows she accepts the dangers of the vaccine, whereas my father is just I don't know why he's just easier to persuade. So yeah, I don't know what happens legally if one parent says no and the other says yes. I have no idea. Maybe there are people listening in who might know better than I do.
Can I ask you this? Look, this is personal. You don't have to answer this. I imagine that must be causing a bit of friction between mum and dad. Surely it must be.
I certainly don't want to be at home right now.
Is that right?
The best of times, there are, you know, a lot of arguments, but obviously the past years must have been very difficult. But yes, I mean, these people are very pushy. The senior director of the care home and his GP, I probably won't name her just in case. Obviously the GPs are in the pay of Big Pharma. The care home people are just following directives from the government. They seem to have no recognition of the immune system. I mean, what happened to that? Why would anyone with a healthy immune system need this experimental injection? Just a couple of questions I have. And like, why is this injection being sold as the ticket to freedom? Like, it's like Auschwitz, like Arbeit macht frei, Impfung macht frei. I've studied German, so, you know, it's like the vaccine is this like ticket to freedom. You've seen that in the UK press as well. And on the Dusseldorf TV tower there last week, they had an art installation actually stating that, like, Impfung macht frei, vaccine, you know, the vaccine is your ticket to freedom, basically.
There's no argument against what you said. You can simplify the entire last 12 months in a couple of sentences. The government told people to close their businesses and stay home. They made their lives miserable. And then the government said the only way out of it is if you take the vaccine. That's exactly the 12 months that we've just had summed up in a nutshell. I hate to...
Definitely.
Isn't it? In a nutshell.
That's it, definitely. That's why I see a lot of people complaining about lockdowns. Like, it's very strange for me, because in Belgium, we never had any real lockdown. And, you know, there were signs on billboards saying stay at home, but like lots of people out in the streets, outdoors. Nobody really respected that. So we never had a lockdown. So I'm like here following on social media what's happening in UK and Ireland and trying to understand what this lockdown thing is all about, because, and here in Tunisia, there is no lockdown either. Well, there was for 4 days and then riots broke out and that was the end of that.
Is that right?
So, yeah, it's so strange to me because everybody's complaining about lockdown. We need lockdown to end. But the thing is, the government are selling the vaccine as the key out of lockdown. Yeah. And I think what we need to be focused on, well, I shouldn't say we, but, you know, I mean, today, like in the European Parliament, they fast-tracked, the MEPs voted a fast-track legislation on the digital green certificate. Now, this has been the end game all along, you know, this green pass, they already have it in Israel.
In Israel, yeah.
And it's creating an apartheid state. You know, if you want to go somewhere, if you want to get on a plane, if you don't have this pass, you're not allowed to travel, you're not allowed to go to certain places. And that's what's coming to Europe. Now, the pass, well, the proposed pass in Europe is less restrictive, I think. But, you know, still, there's no need for this, like, absolutely no need. But this is the ticket they're selling, you know, it's the ticket to freedom. This is the solution, you know, the vaccine then is the final solution. It really is like, it's Nazism all over again. That's the way I see it, because I studied history. And yeah, I mean, from day one, I never complied with any of this. I just knew there was something wrong. I said, this is a load of bullshit. I'm not complying.
You're not going to go along.
Wear a mask. No.
Wearing a mask in public. Tell us about Belgium now, because a lot of our listeners won't know this. So you're in Belgium and they did put notices up telling people to be a bit careful, but they didn't lock down. This is true. What did that mean then for hospitalizations and all of that? I suppose Belgium just carried on as normal.
As far as I know, they did shut down some shops, but because I'm not a person who goes shopping regularly, I didn't miss anything. The local supermarket was open, the local bakeries were open, the butchers. So I didn't really notice anything. Apparently some shops were shut, some hairdressers, you know, but it wasn't really noticeable. I mean, life pretty, well, there were some cafes that were shut perhaps. Yeah, I remember going out walking one day. Yeah, I don't have a lot of money, so I don't notice these things.
Yeah.
But to be honest, like, I mean, if this were a real pandemic, there would be people falling dead in the street. That's what I've said from day one. And I didn't know anybody that was sick at the time. My boyfriend works and he has colleagues who got COVID, and a couple were in hospital, I know. But I mean, it was just like a bad flu, you know, it was... I mean, this is it's a bad flu. That's all it is. I don't understand what the fuss is about. Like, I was outdoors most days. Lots of people were socializing in the park. I mean, life went on as normal, you know. So I don't understand this lockdown thing at all. people staying at home because they're afraid of catching a virus. Like, I mean, unless you have military standing outside on your doorstep, then you should be allowed to go out. Like, I mean, I don't see why people are staying at home. It doesn't make any sense to me.
No, we have the military here helping in the vaccination program, which is a terrible thing. Let me ask you more, just back to John. A couple of things about John. You mentioned at the beginning of it, and you told me on the phone today, we had a brief chat. When John was adopted, unknowns to mum and dad, he had epilepsy, but he was... totally cognitive, and he was beginning to speak. He was beginning to articulate himself and speak.
Mm-hmm.
And it was after the MMR jab that he changed, that his personality changed, and he stopped speaking. Is that right?
That's right, yes. So, I mean, my parents probably would have been, they should have taken legal action or something, but they just didn't have the skills or the finances to do. Yeah, I mean, it's just, you know, it's a lot to deal with. So, I mean, we just cope with the situation. I mean, he looks perfectly normal. So the only thing, yeah, the epileptic fits are the main thing that kind of prevent us from looking after him at home.
But I tell you what, Charlene, yeah. Listening to you now and reading your mail, you're obviously open to things that most people are not open to. Did you think about the oil, the cannabis oil for the epilepsy? Because we've talked about that on the programme before.
I have heard about that, yes. I know there's a woman in Cork actually, Vera Toomey, I think.
Yeah,
name
who's
it.
Been on with me, yeah.
That's all right. No, we never, I don't think we ever tried that. No, we didn't. We've never gone down the alternative route, to be honest. Like, my parents are quite traditional. But yeah, thanks for mentioning that. Yes, but yeah, trying to persuade my parents. Well,
and where, I know that might be difficult.
It's a different
story. Where is the COVID vaccine situation now? Do you think John might have had it?
No, not yet. The vaccine rollout was delayed for the month of March in the care homes. As far as I know, it's planned for April. As far as I know, nobody in the care home has received it yet. They did the nursing homes first in Ireland. And as I was saying to you earlier today, that, you know, there's been a huge spike in deaths of the elderly at nursing homes.
Now, tell me about this, Geraldine. I'm not here now to be interrogating you. Of course not. But I wouldn't be being fair to the listeners if I didn't ask you about that. I've heard this, and you're not the first person to say it to me. How have you come to understand that deaths in care homes have escalated in Ireland? How do we know this?
I follow a couple of accounts on Twitter that share very informative information, the facts, basically. You know, it's difficult. The media, obviously, the mainstream media is completely corrupt in Ireland. You get no facts whatsoever from them. So I follow Health Freedom Ireland and the Irish Inquiry.
Yeah.
They both do excellent work. You know, they're providing factual information. They're helpful, caring. So I would recommend everyone follow them to get actual facts about what's happening.
You might be excited to hear this. It isn't Ireland, but in Westminster this afternoon, two Conservative Party MPs asked a very flustered Matt Hancock, could he give them data pertaining to people who have died 3 weeks or more after getting a coronavirus vaccine. I was astonished that an MP would ask that question. How many people have died since getting the vaccine? And Matt Hancock nearly collapsed because he didn't know what to say. So I wonder, this might be positive.
I'd love to have seen that.
it was a picture. His face was a picture when he was asked. Because two guys asked him in a row. The first guy asked him and he thought, well, I've gotten away with that. Then another MP stood up and said, yes, where is the data on people who have been vaccinated, who died after being vaccinated? I don't know the answer, but I suspect that some people in care homes for sure have died after getting a vaccine. And I don't think they'll be able to keep a lid on that, Geraldine. I don't think so.
Definitely. Yeah, I've seen someone provided me with stats from the UK as well. There's a lot of kind people on Twitter who, you know, we're sharing information with each other because we know the authorities are there to help us. And a lady shared stats on UK care home deaths. The exact same thing is happening in the UK as in Ireland. So, I mean, it's good MPs are at least asking this question. I think, like, in the UK Parliament, there seems to be more questioning going on than in the Irish Parliament. I mean, the Irish political scene is absolutely just awful. I mean, the left is more authoritarian than the right.
Yep.
So there's no facts. So, I mean, Health Freedom Ireland, the Irish Inquiry, they're the people to go to for just news, basically, about what's happening.
Forget about
it's
RTE.
Awful. It's really awful what's going on, you know. I mean, it's volunteers doing this work. I always knew RTE was corrupt. I'd been involved in anti-fracking campaigns in Ireland and across Europe. And I knew, like, Irish media especially was very, very corrupt. And they always promote the line of corporations.
Globalism. On board with globalism, RTE and the BBC. Absolutely, Geraldine.
They have no regard whatsoever for ordinary people, for suffering. I think RTE is even worse than the BBC. I was saying this to someone the other day. that it's actually worse than BBC. So, I mean, I wasn't, you know, surprised. This is why I kind of didn't believe in this pandemic, you know. Obviously, there's some virus out there. There's something happening, right? But, I mean, if it was that bad, there would be people dropping dead in the street, you know. I keep saying this to my boyfriend.
Where's the bodies?
Absolutely mad. Where the he says, like, shut up.
I was going to ask you, so where is the fella then? Is he on board with your thinking on this, or does he think differently?
I'm a conspiracy theorist.
Are you, to the boyfriend?
I know. I mean, yeah. I mean, when I was campaigning against fracking, he already thought I was crazy. And I'll be completely open about what he does. He works in soil remediation, which is treating soils that have been polluted by the fossil fuel industry. And so he has to travel abroad sometimes, and he went to Texas a few years ago and he saw fracking for himself. And then he came back and said, oh, that fracking thing. Oh, you're right. Yeah, that's bad.
Fair enough.
So, yeah, until he sees it for himself, until he experiences what the impacts are, then I'm taken seriously. But because he's a scientist, you know, PhD in chemistry, much more qualified than I am, he knows better.
He loves the vaccines then? He thinks this is...
No, actually, he's a bit suspicious. he is asking questions and, but he is very much in the system, you know. It's difficult when somebody's in the system, they have colleagues who all think this, you know, there's groupthink at work. So it's difficult for him to question, but he is asking more questions. Hopefully he won't take the job.
Tell me about life in Tunisia, because you said then going back to Europe, and you kind of said unfortunately. So it sounds like life in Tunisia is idyllic, it sounds.
Well, pretty much comparing with what's happening in Ireland, and, well, Belgium isn't probably so bad, because I knew, like, when I was there last year that the media kind of blows things out of proportion as well. So, but I mean, there was a travel restriction. We couldn't go from one city to another for maybe a couple of months. And then I heard it was removed because very few people were complying with it. So low compliance levels means the restrictions are just removed.
Yeah.
I mean, there are some restrictions still in place here, like supermarkets require you to wear a mask. But if you go to local shops, butchers, bakeries, there's none of that. You can get away without wearing any mask. And very few people wear masks here. If you see people wearing masks, it's usually in the better off areas. You go to working class areas and you'd be, you know, it's very difficult to see anyone wearing a mask there. There's very low compliance with recommendations that the government have put in place. There was a lockdown for 4 days when I was here. Obviously, there was a lockdown earlier last year as well, but I wasn't around to see that. That was obviously a bit stricter. But there was a 4-day lockdown and a curfew at 4 p.m. Riots broke out in a neighborhood not so far away from us. A group of young anarchists. There's a lot of anarchist graffiti around this place. A lot of people don't like the state. My boyfriend was like, oh, these are bad people, you know, they're trying to smash, they'll come and break into our house and all this. And I was like, no, these are good people. These are the people who will, you know, get us freedom.
They've had enough of the nonsense. That's why they're reacting.
Any day of the week over the people who are terrified of their houses being broken into. They obviously smashed some windows or whatever, you know, and they headed for government buildings, but the police cracked down on them. There's a very strong police force here, so they didn't get very far. But the government removed restrictions on cafe opening times. We haven't seen a lockdown since. The curfew was extended to 8 p.m. Now it's 10 p.m. Life is normal. There are people on the street. There are like kids playing. There's no masks. Shops are open. We can now travel from one city to another. We went to a restaurant one Sunday. everything was normal. Obviously, there are a few people wearing masks because they feel, you know, they're like precious, you know. Yeah. It really is the bourgeoisie who wear the masks.
They wear the masks. You see them on the streets here. It sounds idyllic. Do us a favour, Geraldine. Do stay in touch with me. Let us know how John gets on, will you, please? I'd really appreciate that.
I feel as if I've spoken more about my own life, but
no, you haven't. No, you told us about you explained John's situation. It's important because, as I said, since I had Susie on a couple of weeks back, I've had quite a hefty correspondence from people who know people in care. Some of them have people in care like your brother. They're not elderly, but they're in care because of autism or things like, and they're worried about the vaccine as well. So it'll resonate with a lot of people, I have no doubt.
What we have to be wary of, like, is obviously the lockdowns are bad, you know, obviously some of the restrictions are bad, but the government are counting on our, you know, our desire for freedom, you know, and the vaccine is represented as that ticket. It's sold as this ticket to freedom. The vaccine pass is sold as this ticket to freedom. And they really are manipulating us psychologically. So I think we have to be wary of that and make sure. Yeah, I mean, personally, I want the rollout of vaccines to stop. I would call for mass civil disobedience. I would, you know, if I were at home in Ireland, I would be down at the GP surgery and, you know, standing outside or doing something. I mean, I would physically confront these people. I think that's what needs to be done. So, I mean, they've already, I mean, we can't say for sure that, you know, the elderly died, elderly in nursing homes died because of the vaccine, but I mean, it's very likely. So I think this needs to stop. I mean, it's experimental gene therapy, as Professor Dolores Cahill said. And, you know, this isn't just about my brother. It has to be. I mean, if we've seen the elderly die, the disabled are next. I mean, it is Nazism, you know, that's what it is. So I just want it all to stop now. There is no reason whatsoever to roll out. There's no reason for restrictions. There's no reason for PCR tests. There's no reason for vaccines. There's none. It's just a bad flu. I mean, just can we go back to normal? I mean, life here is pretty normal. So why can't it be normal in Ireland and elsewhere? I just don't understand it. It drives me mad. Like,
the time
people are complying.
Well, this is it. And the time is now. As a number of guests have said to me this week, the time to push back on it is now. Geraldine, thanks so much for getting in touch with us.
Thank you for listening, Richie. And I hope, you know, this will resonate with others and people take action, actual physical action. The politicians aren't listening. The media won't cover the truth. It's up to normal people to take action and just, tell GPs that, you know, we're not having this. We have to stop it because it's genocide. Like, that's what it is.
I think you're right. Listen, all the best to you there in Tunisia and to your brother John and your family and to your other half. And thanks for getting in touch. It never ceases to amaze me. You can go anywhere on planet Earth to the furthest reaches of the planet and you'll find a Paddy there somewhere. There's no doubt about it.
I don't know if I'm alone here or not. I mean, I don't socialise a lot because I'm just so busy trying to fight this. But Thank you for listening, Richie.
Anytime, Geraldine. All the best to you.
Bye-bye.
Bye for now. That was Geraldine, obviously, who got in touch with the programme through the website, basically. And again, it was miraculous that I saw the email. I don't ignore my emails, but I work alone, obviously. I produce, edit and present the programme. And I have a lot of stuff to do. And the website gets a lot of people sending me just messages or their opinions. And it's not that I don't want to read your opinions. Of course I do. I don't have a lot of time for that. I really don't. And I miss most of what comes through. That's why there's a little message that says the show gets a lot of correspondence. It's not because I'm big-headed, or I'm certainly not big-headed. But it's difficult. Anybody who operates at this level, you can expect to get a lot of correspondence. It was a miracle I saw Geraldine's message, really. And I'm glad that I did. Her brother John has got autism. His own backstory is very interesting. 2 years old, he was adopted, and he was beginning to speak, and then he had the MMR jab. Now, this is hearsay, of course. I'm not saying I don't believe Geraldine, but her family believes that it was immediately after having the jab, or very soon after the jab, that he began to develop difficulties, and he's in a care home now in Cork, and they're concerned, the sisters are concerned about him getting a coronavirus vaccine. Mum said absolutely no way, but Dad seems to have given consent And they're worried about that. So that's why she came on the programme to talk about it. It's exactly, what is it, 19 minutes to the top of the hour. This is Thursday's Richie Allen radio programme. Here's a tune from Tom Robinson. And I'll be back with more chat, I suppose, after this Thursday, the 25th of March 2021. Two, four, six, eight, motorway, Tom Robinson, the Richie Allen radio programme, Thursday's edition. Hey, don't forget to join me on Sunday morning at 10 o'clock for Sunday Morning Melodies. I don't think it's relevant anymore to mention the hour going forward. Pre-mobile phone days, you had to be concerned about forgetting about the hour going forward, didn't you? Didn't you? You did, because you had to wind your watches on before you went to bed, or you had to wind your clocks on. These days, there's no excuse for forgetting about the hour, because everything updates automatically anyway. So if you set your alarm to wake up on Sundays for anything, for Mass at 8:30 or whatever, you don't have to worry about the hour going forward. But the hour does go forward. We move to British summer time this coming weekend, so it'll be an hour less in bed for most of us on Saturday night, Sunday morning. I'll be with you at 10 o'clock. 2 hours. It's got nothing to do really with the Richie Allen show. It's just me playing a few tunes for a couple of hours. Songs and stories, basically. You either like it or you don't. It's either your thing or it isn't. But I like it. I enjoy doing it, so I'll continue to do it on Sundays. Alan in Liverpool, otherwise known as Bass Ninja, says to me, I had a Chicken Lips GP phone call today. A Chicken Lips GP phone call to get my shoulder looked at on the phone. Told her I'm not engaging in testing. I've got no symptoms, nor am I a walking bioweapon. She agreed, says Alan. That's interesting. Yeah. I suppose there will be quite a lot of GPs who will decide not to have the vaccine themselves. I have no doubt about that. You see, GPs are, they're generally fairly bright people, reasonably bright. I'm not saying they're brighter than you or me, not at all. But they're used to reading things and looking things up, you know, many of them anyway, not all of them, but many of them, they will be aware that vaccines cause injury. And vaccines in recent years have caused very serious injuries to people. GPs will know this. And many of them are old enough, and maybe many of them were working back in 2010 when Pandemrix was recommended to people for the old swine flu, which was a load of old bollocks. Well, swine flu. We know that now. We knew then swine flu was a nonsense. We knew that H1N1, bird flu, was nonsense. These were fairy tales designed to get people to take vaccines they didn't need. And Pandemrix did terrible things to people. So, of course, you will have doctors. You will have what we call consultants, right, who might be in their 40s now, their 30s, late 30s. They remember this. They know that mRNA vaccines are not vaccines. They know this, right? They know it better than I know it. And they'll be like, well, some of them will be like, no, thank you. No doubt in my mind. I have no doubt in my mind. My local vaccination centre is on Liverpool Street. It's basically the local vaccination centre for Salford. It's down not too far away from Salford Fire Station. It's at a leisure centre. You can look it up, you'll find it. And I have to say, depressingly, when I run past it, which I do pretty much every day, lots of people queuing up there to go in and have, I think, the AstraZeneca vaccine. Darren says, Richie, the time is definitely now. Bring on the separate society of government believers with their passports to a soon-to-be-closed-for-good pub. I'm happy to join the outsiders right now. Where do I sign, says Darren. I don't know, Darren. I've no idea. Bill says, Richie, we knew bird flu was nonsense. We knew swine flu was nonsense. We know that COVID is nonsense. We do. It's fair to say that whatever COVID is, and I've got an open mind, I'm prepared to consider, as I wrote about on my website, I'm prepared to consider that it might not exist. They know sometimes when a really nasty flu season is coming. They know. they know, they're well aware in advance. They see the signs that a really terrible flu season is coming. Maybe they took advantage of that in the autumn of 2019 and said, Jesus, here's the chance now. Maybe. Or maybe coronavirus is a real thing. I don't know. I'm not scared of being called a COVID denier, you know. I don't give a shit what people think about me. I mean, do you know who you're listening to? Right? This is, it makes me laugh when people say, oh, Richie is scared of saying this and Richie is scared of saying that. First of all, I don't know very much. I invite people on the programme to educate me. I'm certainly not scared of saying anything. Christ, do you not remember 2 years ago what happened to me? The police had to be brought in because Zionist groups in this country were threatening to kill me and everybody around me because of things I said on Twitter about Israel. You know, they've tried to destroy the programme in the national press and persuade people not to come on it. I've got nothing to lose. I'll say whatever I think is going on. The pandemic is a hoax. Of course it is. It's a nonsense. Of course it is. The Great Reset and Agenda 2030 is real. They're hell-bent on introducing transhumanism to completely change what it is to be a human being, to impoverish the vast majority of us. No doubt about that. I'm on board with it. I've seen the evidence. I believe it's happening. But I get accused sometimes, and I don't mind because it's not about me anyway. You know, oh, he won't call COVID itself a hoax. I don't know, you see. Remember, this time, not this time, January 2020, very early January, just after Christmas, I was in a desperately bad situation, health-wise. It's as bad as I've ever been in my life. And I am prone, because of things that happened to me when I was younger, I'm prone to really bad chest infections. And I've had pneumonia 3 times in my life. Not man flu, genuine pneumonia. The worst was when I was 15. I had it bad again, believe it or not, in Spain in 2008. It was horrendous again. And so I know what it's like to feel like that. I get very upset when I even think about it. It was so bad. The feelings of it are so miserable. I remember sitting up one night in the apartment in Spain. And I'm a tough enough guy, you know. I've had a hard enough life that things don't get me down too much. But the pain when I was breathing in Spain in 2008 and the feelings of being stabbed in the back when I coughed were so bad that I genuinely wanted to just die. And I was just crying in misery because it wouldn't go away. And I had a very good doctor that was introduced to me by a customer of Caroline's who frequented her bar, Spanish dude, and he got me through it. I have to say January last year was even worse than that. I couldn't believe it. There wasn't so much pain, but I couldn't breathe no matter what. No matter what. Steroids did nothing for it. I couldn't breathe. And I thought one night, that's it, you're gone. You're a goner. So I don't know, you see. So I can't dismiss it out of hand. Coronavirus. 19 or whatever it is. But I'm open to the possibility that it was a very bad flu, and I'm open to the possibility that I got pneumonia again last January. I don't know. I'll tell you what I do know, though. Once we got to September last year, October, by Christ and sunny Jesus, did I begin to stock up on the supplements every day. Oh my God. I haven't missed a day. I take zinc, I take vitamin D3, I take vitamin D, and I take vitamin C. And such was the misery of last year that there's no way I would miss taking those supplements ever again. And I like to think, I've got a bit of a chest infection now, and I've had it for the last 7 or 8 days, and it's a bit of a pain in the arse, but it's a cakewalk compared to last year. And I think the supplement taking is the reason why it's not developing into something worse. I learned my lesson. By God, that I learned my lesson last year. So there you go, you know. So yeah, I'm a bit prone to the old chest and lung things. Never smoked a cigarette, never smoked a joint. I've no time for cigarettes. Don't care too much for cannabis either. Not because I frown upon it, because I've never taken any narcotics. I won't call it narcotics. I've never taken anything really. And I'm very fit. I think that's why I'm reasonably healthy now, but you know. So no, I don't dismiss the idea that coronavirus is just a total hoax. It might be. The virus itself, I don't know. We know about Event 201. We know what Gates and his pals were doing. The great Dr. Thomas Binder got into that on the programme last night. A brilliant conversation with him last night. If you missed it, it's on the usual platforms now. Charlie says he uses a salt pipe, Himalayan salts. Thanks, Charlie. I'll have a look at that link, my friend. That link to that very, very, very gigantic retailer that you just sent. Angela Lambert said, do you have flu vaccines? Angela, do you have to ask your BBG? There he goes again, referring to himself in a third person. He's really lost it now. Do you really? Of course I've never taken a feckin' flu jab. Good God. No. Not in a million years. No, never. The only time I had a vaccine in my life, apart from when I was a baby and I couldn't exempt myself because I was a baby. When I was a baby, I got the BCG vaccine, which they give to every child in Ireland, the polio thing. So I got that. But I never had, there was no such thing as MMR jabs when I was a child. We were thrown on top of children who had the measles. You'll remember this if you're as old as me. Paul Murphy, your little pal from school, he's got the measles, and they would throw you on top of Paul so that you'd get the measles. That's how it went. So I never had a vaccine apart from BCG. And then when I went to Costa Rica in Central America in 2002, and I was going to be in country, basically, I was going to be in country with a lot of people. I was going to be confronted by mosquitoes. I had the malaria vaccine. And I wonder about that now. Should I have had it, you know? But anyway, I did have it. And it, what are we now, 9 years? Is it? No. Jesus wept, Richie. Jesus wept. We're 19 years. That's right. 19 years since I had the malaria jab. And I think I'm okay, you know. I think I'm okay. Yeah, I think I'll be all right. Hi to David S. Recommends I listen to Dr. Sam Bailey. Sam was kicked off her TV programme for saying she wouldn't have the vaccine. Is that right? Kicked off television for saying she wouldn't have the vaccine. I shouldn't sound so surprised by that, David. Thanks for that information because, well, we've seen what has happened to so many of the physicians and doctors that have come on this programme. Look what happened to Thomas Binder. The anti-terror police arrested him last year because he called it out. He called out the PCR test. Didn't he? He said this is total bollocks and these case numbers are just rubbish. Look what they've done to this respected cardiologist. They put him into a mental hospital for a week. I mean, talk about sending a message out to people. Hey, listen, don't tell the truth about this, you know? Wow. Wow. All right then, I'm nearly done today. Hi to Fabrizio and to everybody else who tweeted in. I really appreciate your tweets. Liz says, Richie, I felt like that when I had pleurisy a few years ago. "'Twas a horrendous thing," says Liz, "and it wasn't diagnosed until I saw another doctor," says Liz. Thanks for the tweet there, Liz, and for that bit of information. I appreciate it greatly. I'm going to take my leave of you now. Thank you to the great Paul Craig. About time Paul came back on, eh? Lovely to hear him back on the programme again. Paul will be back with me next month. And thanks to Geraldine, who's in Tunisia, my Irish friend, my new Irish friend from Cork originally, and we wish her brother John all the best, and we wish her parents all the best as they argue about the rights and wrongs of the vaccine. I'll speak to you at 10 o'clock on Sunday morning, Sunday Morning Melodies. Until then, thanks to everybody who came on the programme this week, and thanks to you for your support, and to Mark Boyerski. And I will give Mark the names of 50 totally randomly selected people, by the way. What I'll do is I've got a lovely little, you can get them online. You can download them. It's easy. I've got a random number generator is what I've got. So I will number every everybody who supported the programme this week with a financial contribution. I will number them and then I will get a random number generator to give me 50 random numbers and I will give those people's email addresses to Mark and Mark will send you on a health pack. Of course, it'll all be above board. All right, all right. Thanks to everybody who supported the programme at Mark's behest. And do send some love to Mark Boyerski, because it isn't just the Richie Allen radio show that he supported over the years. It's many others as well. He's got the biggest heart in anybody I've met in recent years. Love the guy, and he just goes about doing good. As I said, not just for me, but for many other people as well. Bob Dylan closing out the programme. See you Sunday, all right? Bye for now. Look after yourselves. Have a fantastic weekend. Take it easy.